We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is the last day of July, which is just incredible how quickly this year has gone. And we are under 100 days until the presidential election. So 97 days out, and early voting in some states starts in about a month. So we are getting really close to that finish line. And it's interesting how the momentum after the Democrats successfully pulled off this coup to replace the candidate that their base actually voted for with the candidate that they think has a better chance to win against Donald Trump, so replace Biden with Harris, now has momentum. And so many outlets, even conservative outlets, are suggesting that Kamala Harris has momentum like Obama did in 2008. I mean, that comparison, at least in terms of the enthusiasm of the Democrat base and overall a wider swath than just the typical politicos, really is remarkable. And I don't think that conservatives should underestimate that. Daily Wire today in their podcast was reporting a poll on enthusiasm that said that Harris's enthusiasm among Democrats, meaning, you know, who among registered Democrats is actually really excited to get out and vote for their candidate, not as a, well, fine, you know, I'll vote for Harris because I don't want to vote for Trump, or I'll vote for Trump because I don't want to vote for Harris. So the Democrats now are at an enthusiasm level of 88%, according to this poll, and that is higher now than Donald Trump's enthusiasm, which is, according to this poll, at 82%. And the remarkable difference, though, because, yeah, that's fairly close, but the remarkable difference is that for the Democrats, that's above and that's a wider margin than in February, when it was at 62% enthusiasm for Joe Biden. So, you know, clearly the Democrats are trying to pull this off. But some of the good news is, at least the polls are showing that Donald Trump is pulling away from Harris, and that maybe this enthusiasm bubble, as some people are calling it, like, okay, this is going to be, you know, just kind of a quick cycle, and then Democrats and then the regulars will just say, okay, we're actually stuck with this candidate. But he is pulling away from Harris in a new poll. So according to a new Harvard-Harris CAPS poll, Donald Trump leads Kamala Harris 52-48 with leaners and 48-45 without. Harris has improved Joe Biden's numbers on the latter, but not the former. The top three issues for respondents in this survey, when asked in an open-ended manner, are inflation at 37%, so, you know, more specific on the economy, immigration and the border 33%, and the economy overall and jobs 27%. When asked to specify which single issue impacts respondents the most, 45% chose inflation and 14% chose immigration. So the bottom line here is that this is going to be a tight race, it looks like. And so as much as conservatives can sit back and say, you know, really, Kamala Harris, like, you know, cackling Kamala, the borders are Kamala, I don't think that we should underestimate the enthusiasm, because this isn't a year out from the election where there's a lot of time for the Trump team to put out a bunch of ads and to try to define her and define her image, and to suggest to independents and moderates how dangerous her policies actually are. And she's also going to get some enthusiasm bump with Politico reporting this morning that Harris is going to hold her first rally with her running mate on Tuesday in Philadelphia. So interesting choice there. And even though Governor Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania, he said yesterday that he hasn't spoken to Harris since July 21st, the day that Biden dropped out, according to this Politico piece. Harris has until next Wednesday to actually announce that pick, and we've known that because of when the DNC is set to vote. And so now, according to Politico, Harris is planning to hold her first rally with that running mate Tuesday in Philadelphia. But there are now going to be dueling rallies. There have been a bunch of ad spends for both sides dipping into their war chest. There's going to be a lot of battleground ads now that more people are paying attention after kind of, you know, the summer. This is the last day of July, people heading into August. That's really going to ramp up a lot of these things. And, you know, and so let's talk about messaging for a little bit, because this becomes really important. And although I would like to think that everyone who listens to AFR is very well equipped, and we already know that we're voting our values and, you know, some of those very obvious things. But for a lot of people in America, they are actually persuaded by some ads and how the left or the right characterizes their opponents, and how that messaging resonates in various demographics, and how they push it out there. And so while Harris is being likened, I think purposefully, to Obama, whether or not that's actually true in terms of the enthusiasm, perception is often reality. And she's being likened to Obama because he was just wildly, and still is, very wildly popular among Democrats. And that's kind of their sort of Reagan era, right? I mean, they refer to Obama in probably as glowing terms as most conservatives refer to Reagan. And so that comparison is like in 2016, when there was a lot of enthusiasm heading into the general election for Donald Trump, and likening his first administration to a Reagan-esque sort of conservatism. And, you know, we're coming back from the establishment elites, and we're, you know, really getting into the issues and the populism that matters to conservatives. This is what the Democrats are, I think, intentionally trying to portray Kamala Harris as. And meanwhile, the opposition attacks should also not be underestimated, because just yesterday, the left was successful in getting Donald Trump not only to continue to distance from Project 2025, but the leader of Project 2025 stepped down altogether. And so Kevin Roberts, who is the president at Heritage, was posting about that. There were a lot of articles that came out last night. And a couple of things on this. So the left, I think, has effectively manufactured a sort of dictatorship crisis, perception of Project 2025 that doesn't actually reflect reality of what Project 2025 is. So this is led by Heritage, the Heritage Foundation, a very conservative organization, and also a coalition of 110 different conservative groups, and a lot of the personnel that were engaged in Project 2025 are former Trump administration advisors or personnel or people who actually worked in the administration. Now, I personally have not, you know, wholesale endorsed Project 2025. I do have some concerns. There are some, in my view, Christian nationalist sort of tendencies in some of these things, and there's a little bit of language that's problematic just from a policy perspective. But overall, the entire idea is to build a conservative victory plan through policy personnel and training. And those are the things that in the first Trump administration, and especially looking into a second which everybody anticipated in 2020, that obviously didn't happen, but now looking forward to a potential second Trump administration, policy and personnel, but especially personnel, are a big question mark for a lot of conservatives that really want to see better people working in the administration that aren't just undermining what Trump says that he's about, but then you get a lot of these deep state sort of, you know, Republicans in name only or rhinos. So this was the whole goal, really, of Project 2025. And so we can quibble with some of the things and, you know, some of the people that were involved or, you know, some of those things. And that's really an intramural sort of debate. But overall, Project 2025 is a good idea to actually have a plan in place. And Heritage, what it is, I think, still trying to be at the front in at least helping Team Trump populate another administration with actual conservatives. The AFPI, which is America First Policy Institute, is also trying to lead the way as well. And Trump has come out very clearly and said, well, nobody speaks for me. We're not engaged with any specific organization in terms of personnel and policy and what the presidential transition would actually look like. But the problem here with how the left has messaged Project 2025 is that their position this to be, and they've successfully done this now as of last night, to be this this really scary sort of look at this right-wing extremist kind of plan that's post-constitutional and it's going to set up Trump to be a dictator and, you know, all of these things. And unfortunately, what happens quite often with Trump is instead of saying, okay, let's sit down and actually look at what Project 2025 is, he reads all of this stuff in the media and then just reacts and distances from it, not recognizing the collateral consequence to a lot of the conservative allies and groups that he'll actually need if he gets in office, and then how that looks in the bigger messaging. And so after this was announced that the Project 2025 leader had stepped down and the project is basically concluded. And Kevin Roberts said, you know, we've accomplished our goal, though. We have kind of a policy plan for future conservative administrations, even beyond Trump. The Trump campaign put out a statement that said this: President Trump's campaign has been very clear for over a year that Project 2025 has nothing to do with the campaign, did not speak for the campaign, and should not be associated with the campaign or the president in any way. Reports of a Project 2025 demise would be greatly welcomed and should serve as notice to anyone or any group trying to misrepresent their influence with President Trump and his campaign. It will not end well for you. Really? We want to sound kind of like the mob or the mafia? I mean, this to me was just a little bit over the top ridiculous. But this is signed by, you know, two of the senior advisors and the Trump campaign manager. So Susie Wiles and Chris LaCivita. And rightly, there are a number of conservative commentators that are ardent Trump supporters. I mean, you know, these are people who want to see a second Trump administration, that are very concerned to see this type of this kind of stranglehold on what the Team Trump is or is not aligning themselves with, because it looks like there's a lot of gatekeeping going on. And you have to remember that Chris LaCivita, back in 2021, right after January 6th and, you know, all of the things that happened post-election, was literally calling on his social media for Trump to be tried for treason. And now he's the campaign manager. I mean, this to me doesn't speak well of, okay, let's get better policy in place. And so this whole narrative is not only effective now for the left, but now for the people who have been kind of on the fence, sort of, you know, should we vote for Trump? Do we think that he'll have a better personnel? This entire episode, the left has won, I think, the PR game to effectively have some conservatives questioning whether personnel will actually be better, and questioning, you know, why is Chris LaCivita really in charge of this whole thing? And why is there so much gatekeeping instead of in 2016 when Trump was welcoming voices from everyone? I mean, he was notorious for saying, I'm going to listen to everybody and I'm going to hear from everybody, rather than just having just this very internal, only specific Team Trump people. So in terms of the messaging, I think Team Trump really needs to get it together. I think they need to go after Kamala Harris on not just her dangerous policy, but her worldview. We're going to talk about that a lot more this week, because this really comes down to a transformation of America, or do we want to continue to have genuine freedom and liberty? That's the bottom line of what this is about. And we have all of this sort of, you know, nonsense distractions over here, like how they handled Project 2025. It doesn't actually help. This is going to be a very tight election. It's going to be really fascinating. But we'll be right back to discuss all of this and more right after this. A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there is an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 will underwrite ultrasounds for an entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, a lot going on nationally and also in foreign policy. So let's welcome in Representative Tom Tiffany from the great state of Wisconsin. Good morning, Representative, and great to have you join us as always.
Jenna, good to join you this morning.
Yeah, well, so first I want to get your take on the Wall Street Journal opinion piece saying that, and this was a headline, Biden's political assault on the Supreme Court. His destructive plan would make the justices servants of the politics of the day. This is by the editorial board, which is actually shocking that they're so spot on. And it goes on to say President Biden on Monday announced his plan to, quote unquote, reform the Supreme Court. And it's important to understand how radical this political moment is. The president is putting the full weight of the Democratic Party behind an assault on judicial independence and the constitutional order. You might call it an attack on democracy. I actually agree with the Wall Street Journal. It's surprising. What do you and the House Judiciary Committee and Republicans think about this proposal?
Well, first of all, it's going to be dead on arrival in the House of Representatives because we're not going to take it up because it's unconstitutional. But let's remember what's behind this. This is to motivate Democrats. There is nothing better to motivate their base, which has been very sullen here over the last couple months, viewing Joe Biden as their candidate. Once we get through the honeymoon phase with Kamala Harris, people are going to figure out she's no great shakes. So they got to get their base motivated. And this is the way to do it, is to turn it on the court. Think about what they did in regards to the student loan forgiveness thing. They were trying to motivate leading up to the 2022 election, trying to motivate young people, and they were successful at it by forgiving their student loans. And then he knew, President Biden and his advisors, they knew that the court was going to strike this down because it's unconstitutional. Nancy Pelosi said, this is like a year prior to him doing it, Nancy Pelosi said, no, you can't do that. You got to send it through the House of Representatives and Congress. So they knew, and this is the same instance, Jenna, they know this isn't going anywhere. This is meant to gin up their base for 2024.
Yeah, and it's really, unfortunate that, you know, Biden, even though he's now literally a lame duck president, is still using that office basically to campaign for Kamala Harris. And now there is a lot of attacks, I think, from Team Trump on the whole border czar issue. And you tweeted, which I love this, they want to promote Kamala Harris to amnesty czar. I think that's a really good talking point because, you know, this is the administration that has allowed for open borders, that doesn't care about protecting Americans. And yet we're not seeing a lot of the ties of the Biden-Harris administration policies to Kamala. Do you think that that needs to be messaged better?
Yeah, you know, and I think you kind of hit it in the run-up to this segment when at the end of last segment you talked about the transformation of America. You'll notice in regards to immigration, illegal immigration, they're not stopping. They may say a few things that they try to placate the public with, but this is continuing apace. The numbers are continue to be record numbers coming in the United States. This is meant to transform America, and they're not going to give up on it. So we just have to continue to message that. And to your point, it is very important that we stay on point in regards to inflation, the high cost of living, and illegal immigration into our country. We need to be talking about that all the time. And this is about the Biden-Harris administration. In fact, you can take it to two very specific things that Kamala Harris was charged with. One is the border. She is the border czar, and she should be tied to that every single day. And the second thing is she was the deciding vote on one of those trillion-dollar bills the previous session that passed through Congress, signed by President Biden. She was the deciding vote as the vice president in the Senate, serving in the Senate. To cast those deciding votes to spend over $1 trillion that has led to this inflation that we have. We need to directly tie her to that stuff.
And I'm speaking with Representative Tom Tiffany from the great state of Wisconsin. And yeah, it's really fascinating to see how so much that is negative of the Biden-Harris administration, or as Biden himself has referred to it as the Harris-Biden administration. maybe the Republicans need to start saying that and echoing those comments, that they've been able to sort of effectively distance her from all of the negatives in terms of the border and the economy, which are two of the key issues, at least from polling. Are you seeing that same reflection? I mean, Wisconsin is one of the swing states heading into 2024. Are you seeing your constituents in Wisconsin having those same issues at the fore when contemplating not just the presidential election, but up and down ballot in terms of what their concerns are?
Oh, their concerns are in regards to the economy. The polling is accurate in regards to this. This is about the cost of living. People know when they go into the grocery store, they're like, man, this is crazy. And, you know, this whole thing that, you know, costs have only went up like 20%, which is significant, but it's far more than that. When you go out and buy anything at this point, you compare it to 5 years ago, and that's really what the test is. Were you better off 5 years ago? And that is the question we need to repeat all the time, because they're always going to bring it back to personality, right, Jenna? They're always going to ask the question, well, what about Donald Trump, this or that? What about what he said? Or now, J.D. Vance, what do you think about what he said? That's not what this is about. We have to make sure this is about policies. 5 years ago, we were better off. The border was largely secure and getting more secure. We did not have this inflation. We had a strong America abroad. I mean, look at the brush fires going on all over the world as a result of this weak foreign policy. We need to emphasize those things day after day. And if we can keep it to policy, we win in November, up and down the ballot.
Which I think is absolutely accurate, and why the left is going to try to shift this into more of personality and likening Kamala Harris to an Obama figure rather than policy, because they know they can't win on policy. So let's talk about Congress going into this, you know, lengthy recess. Do you think that that ultimately is playing into the favor of Kamala Harris's kind of enthusiasm bubble, because, you know, she's gotten a lot of the media and press attention, and so rather than being able to have a lot of these committee hearings, being able to put forward other legislation and do some of these things in the Republican majority, now we're going to have kind of this lengthy period where the focus is going to be entirely on the campaigns.
Well, we knew all along that if Joe Biden wasn't the candidate, that there, whoever replaced him was going to have this love fest. It was inevitable. The mainstream media is a full adjunct of the Democrat National Committee. They are Pravda of the United States of America at this point. We knew this was all going to happen, but we need to get out and deliver that message. And I actually think through the month of August here, if we're effective as members of Congress, we're going to be out messaging this stuff. And I think it's a great opportunity to take it back home, because to a certain extent, it doesn't matter what happens in Washington, D.C. It's how people perceive this stuff back at home. And you think about the state of Wisconsin here, a key state, I would say the key state in the election. Win Wisconsin, you win the presidency. I think we can use this time very valuably to be able to go back to the voters in Wisconsin and deliver that message we were just talking about.
Yeah, really, really well said. And I want to shift gears now a little bit to what we've seen in terms of the acting Secret Service director. This is Ronald Rowe, and the testimony about the assassination attempt of former President Trump. And there have been a lot of suggestions that he's not even really being that forthcoming. And one of the reporters, Kyle Becker, said yesterday on X, Senator Marsha Blackburn confronts acting Secret Service Director Ronald Rowe about a deleted counter-sniper's email calling out the agency's lack of accountability over the Trump assassination attempt. So we've seen, it's a good thing that since we last talked, Representative Tom Tiffany, at least Kimberly Cheadle stepped down. We now have this new acting Secret Service director. We now have this task force that is bipartisan from the speaker. And are we going to get more answers? It seems like the media has sort of just moved on, which is absolutely wild to me, because this should be continuing as one of the top stories. So what is your knowledge about the task force and whether or not we're going to get some of these answers?
Yeah, the task force is established now, and hopefully we'll get answers. I thought it was a very effective hearing yesterday with the questions from Holly, Cruz, Blackburn, and others getting to the bottom of this. We are going to get to the bottom of it. And I know it's really frustrating for our supporters that it doesn't happen faster, but you want to make sure you have the facts. But what we're going to find out is that this runs deep. And this is why it's so important we win this election in November. I mean, you have all these agencies, in particular our intelligence and protective agencies like the Secret Service. It just appears they're fully compromised at this point. And if it isn't willful, they certainly are incompetent. And as a result of the DEI woke culture, whatever it is, it is failing America, and it failed us when President Trump was almost assassinated. But it failed us when Robert Kennedy did not get protective service as he should have gotten. So it is a real failure, and it has to be cleaned out. It's got to be cleaned out. Otherwise, heinous acts like assassination attempts are going to continue. You begin to look like a third world country, don't we?
Yeah, and I think in some ways, unfortunately, we already do, and that's what why hopefully America will get out and vote our values and actually want to restore America rather than this kind of transformation of a leftist Marxist utopia that is the left's vision. But in terms of, you know, this is taking longer, as you mentioned, than the American people would like. But once we actually get through the investigation with this task force, what can Congress actually do with that information?
Yeah. The main thing that we can do, Jenna, is use the power of the purse. And we can force reform with the power of the purse. What we need is strong leadership here after we get to the bottom of this that says that you have to commit to the following reforms. Otherwise, we're simply not going to give you the money. It's much like, you know, the FBI has this new building that's bigger, my understanding is bigger than the Pentagon, that they are proposing, and I believe they've got some of the funding for it, at least for the planning process. That money needs to be pulled back until there is accountability from the FBI and these other Department of Justice, Secret Service, and others. We have to have accountability to the American people rather than these self-serving bureaucracies that are just trying to incorporate their power to Washington, D.C., rather than representing the good people of the United States of America.
Yeah, yeah, so well said. And in just the last few minutes I have with you, Representative Tom Tiffany from the great state of Wisconsin. Of course, the main headline coming out of yesterday was Israel eliminating a Hezbollah's commander that was responsible for the attack on the children playing soccer over the weekend. And so the IDF announced that death of the Hezbollah commander who's behind the drone strike. Is there a concern right now because of how lame duck Joe Biden is? And regardless of who wins in November, there is that transition time of about 3 months that the United States is not going to be as effective in helping our ally Israel and some of these really national security concerns. Or how do you view the escalation of the tensions in the Middle East?
Weakness leads to war. Weakness leads to instability. That's what we're getting around the world as a result of the feckless foreign policy of Joe Biden, which actually Antony Blinken is the president of our foreign policy at this point. We all know Joe Biden is not capable of doing it at this point, and he's one of the globalists. And this is what happens when you treat your allies as foes and you treat your foes as allies. This is what happens, and this is what Blinken and crew have done, is they've diminished Israel, and it has a very harmful impact. Plus, with all the money that they gave to Iran, remember, when the sanctions went off, what is it, like $100 billion was released for the Iranians to be able to use. And we know what the Iranians are going to use this for. They're not using it for their people, for medicine, food, shelter, and things like that. They're using it, death to Israel. Death to America is what they are seeking. But I give Israel all the credit in the world. Prime Minister Netanyahu was before us last week, and he said, this is good versus evil. This is civilization versus barbarism. And he is not taking his foot off the pedal in making sure that Israel will continue to be able to stand. Because if it was up to the Biden administration, Antony Blinken and people like that, they would fully compromise Israel. Kudos to Israel for standing up for their sovereignty.
Yeah, so well said. And in just the last minute we have with you, how important is Kamala Harris's vice presidential pick in terms of understanding where the Democrats are in their relationship with Israel?
Oh, you know, it's always important. It's the second person in line to the presidency. But ultimately, this is going to be about Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. And I mean, that's what this race is going to be all about. And if we stay focused on that as Republicans, Kamala Harris, border czar, Kamala Harris deciding vote for a $1 trillion bill that has led to the inflation we have, Kamala Harris, the radical progressive California, you want the rest of the country to look like California with beggars in the streets, the homeless, half the homeless in the country are out there. If that's what you want for America, Kamala Harris is your person. If you want a strong America, a strong, prosperous America, you're going to vote Republican and Donald Trump here in November.
Yeah, we certainly don't want to make America California. Maybe we need to tag Kamala Harris with that line that she wants to make America California. But Representative Tom Tiffany, always so appreciate your time, your insights, and thank you for serving so faithfully on Capitol Hill. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
The American Family Association's mission is to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. Our goal is to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. AFA aims to evangelize the lost and disciple the believer. We aim to strengthen biblical marriages and equip parents to raise godly children.
Thank you for standing with the American Family Association.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And let's continue to talk about the situation in the Middle East and Israel eliminating Hezbollah's commander that was responsible for the attack on the children playing soccer over the weekend. And let's welcome in my next guest, Scott Uhlinger, who is a retired CIA station chief. And Scott, you know, this was a really big move for Israel and has definitely escalated things a lot further than what Anthony Blinken said may happen. And I think a lot of people were surprised to see Israel take this kind of bold action. Where are we at then with the escalating conflict in the Middle East?
Right. Thanks, Jenna. Well, another thing I want to make sure people understand is that the death of Abu Shukr, who was taken out in Beirut, also had American blood on his hands. There was a $5 million reward for him, and believe it or not, all the way back in 1983, the attack in Lebanon on the Marine Corps barracks under Reagan, which killed 283 Marines, he was involved in it. So he's off to hell, and personally, I am very glad about it. He was also tied to the recent death, obviously, of the children a few days ago. But Israel's put out a note that that they don't intend on like widening the war in that area, and we're not sure how effective that kind of statement will be. But I think it will be somewhat effective, because what the Arab world is seeing is that Israel is extremely effective with its use of intelligence and these very measured strikes, and that literally they can strike anywhere, and that's going to give all these terrorists pause about expanding into a wider war.
Wow, that's really fascinating background to this. And, you know, this is always so much more detailed than just, you know, the top headlines and all of this. And so how are the United States responding to this in terms of, we have a lame duck president right now. We have Kamala Harris, who's campaigning, who is no real friend of Israel. And yet I also don't really see the Trump campaign kind of taking ownership of this issue and trying to make what was great foreign policy, especially on Israel, with Donald Trump and his first administration kind of at the fore. And I personally think that's a mistake. I think the Trump campaign, this is a really good time to remind everyone that we were more secure as a nation when Donald Trump was in office.
Yeah, certainly. There's no question at all that we were. I think that, you know, Biden, of course, is a pudding brain, and there's nothing going on there. But I think, you know, Israel has long learned in the last 6 months to basically not pay any attention to the Biden administration, and they're going to do what they think is right. Apparently, there was a big dust up yesterday. I was on Middle East TV yesterday because there were some American officials who somehow had pledged to the Lebanese government that the Israelis would not strike in Lebanon, in Beirut itself. So that shows you how right now this administration is, you know, one day behind the Israelis in terms of formulating responses. You know, their Middle East policy has been a disaster for 3 years. So we're just seeing that continue. But Israel knows that it has to do what it has to do. And certainly the Israeli government is looking at a Trump victory as a way of moving forward. They certainly hope that that's the case for their own sake, and for our country's sake, I hope so too. The another interesting thing that maybe you didn't even catch, it was just announced this morning, this is at least as significant, is that about last night, the Israelis took out in Tehran, Iran, the head of Hamas, Ismail Haniyeh. So this is showing you Israel's moves lately. I mean, they reached out more than 3,000 miles to take out the major port that the Houthis use in Yemen. 3,000 miles overflight for that. Now they took out the man responsible for the deaths of our Marines and 12 children in Beirut. And last night they took out the billionaire head of Hamas, right in the middle of Tehran, which is a real
reminder to the Iranians that Israel can reach out anywhere and attain its missions. So, so this is, in a way, this will actually, in a strange way, the way the Middle East works, I think that these things will actually help against expansion, because this type of Israeli strength is very intimidating in the Muslim world.
And that hopefully is a good thing. And I'm speaking with Scott Uhlinger, who's a retired CIA station chief. And yeah, I mean, this is a show of strength, just will have the intended effect of saying, you know, you better think twice. And we've seen reports that Turkey's Erdogan is considering invading Israel. Does this send a message to Turkey and perhaps, you know, others who are contemplating similar action?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it does. You know, Erdogan is the leader of Turkey. I mean, you know, he is no friend of the United States, and he has been, you know, rattling his saber a little bit more recently about Israel, despite the fact that, let's say, 15 years ago, Israel and Turkey had an outstanding relationship. But now that's no longer the case. So Erdogan is saying, oh, you know, I'm going to send something, you know, and it's mostly for his domestic audience, because he is losing appeal amongst his own people. They're sick and tired of having 80% inflation every single year. And so, so this is a reminder to the Turks and to everybody else that the Israelis can, you know, wage war far more effective than anyone else in the Middle East. And like I said, being a veteran of like 300 TV appearances in the Middle East, they are intimidated by this type of Israeli power and the use of intelligence in warfare. And so this will prevent the war from expanding, as these countries realize that they don't want to get involved in something that's going to end with their heads on a plate if they're going to go up against Israel.
Yeah, and I spoke with Representative Tom Tiffany a little bit about the messaging from the Trump campaign versus the Harris campaign in terms of foreign policy, and I want to get your take on it as well, Scott Uhlinger, because you know, while Trump has said at his rallies, I think one of his most powerful statements, and he said this from his acceptance speech at the RNC, was that the hostages need to be returned before he gets back in office. That was a really strong statement, but I'm not really seeing the Trump campaign address a lot of the national security issues as much as I personally think that they should, because, you know, we're all concerned about the border. I mean, the border and the economy are the number one and two issues for voters, and every American, regardless of your politics otherwise, wants to be secure in their home and in their person. We want national security, and so, you know, the border issue is a big deal, but national security also is as well. And I don't think that anybody can seriously argue that we've been better off in terms of national security under a Biden administration than we were a Trump administration. So do you think that they need to lean into that more?
Well, I think that they're doing everything for a reason. And so I think it is true. While Trump has certainly talked about the border a lot, but he has not really addressed the Middle East quite as much. And maybe that is a conscious decision on their part. We all know, I know, and everyone, and most people know who follow Trump and his beliefs, understand that he is, you know, he was responsible for the Abraham Accords and all of that. And he is a big supporter of Israel. And so perhaps he's just going with that because he wants to avoid maybe overt messaging as a way of attracting other, like maybe some disenfranchised Democrats into the party. So like he's maybe treading lightly in that for political reasons. That's the only thing I can come up with. But there is no doubt that we can already see progress, for instance, in Ukraine. You know, Zelensky, who was always talking about never talking to Putin, suddenly is talking about that now, the possibility of a negotiated settlement. And he's doing it because he's looking at the possibility of a Trump victory. And he understands that Trump is going to bring that conflict to an end. And it's much the same in the Middle East. The Netanyahu government understands that if in the event of a Trump victory, that, you know, that Israel will be supported. And in fact, Hamas should also, and I think is looking at this and is saying, okay, look, we need to get on the right side of the Americans. And so hopefully his message about delivering the hostages, the five U.S. hostages still at large, which Biden has done not one thing about, hopefully that will happen because they see also a Trump victory and they fear that prospect.
Yeah, and it's just incredibly absurd that the Biden administration hasn't done anything, and they're not even addressing it. I mean, it's almost like it's a non-issue to the Biden administration.
Exactly.
and Tony Blinken, which is just I think is just a dereliction of a primary duty of a presidential administration. But let's talk in the last few minutes I have with you, Scott Uhlinger, is a former CIA station chief, about the assassination attempt investigation and the task force that it has now been formed in Congress. They're about to take a really long recess, so I'm not really sure how they're going to get to the bottom of some of these questions in this investigation unless the task force is planning to somehow continue during this break, but I don't think so. What is your understanding of the task force and how thorough they can be in terms of actually getting to the bottom of some of these questions that we all have about how just ridiculous and incompetent the Secret Service has been?
Right. I mean, this entire incident is an absolute disaster. And I believe that the hearings, while they have been, maybe they've provided good drama, we have to hope that these congressional hearings have a little bit of teeth in them, that people are punished for what has happened. Because you can yell at people all you want in the middle of Congress, but if not a single person is losing their job because of these hideous security failures, then it just shows you that the deep state is just contemptuous of Congress, which represents the people. I mean, the people want answers, and the people, we all pay tax money for these people. We are owed answers, and they owe us responsibility and accountability. And I want to see that happen. And what I'm afraid of is that this Congress going out of session is going to slow the momentum of this. But it needs to be picked up as soon as possible because these people need to be accountable. All right, we've seen the head of the Secret Service, removed. Okay, big deal. But there are a lot of people farther down the chain of command. The incredibly messed up problem of communications between Secret Service and Pennsylvania State Police and all of these things. I mean, this stuff is protection 101. I am not an expert on personal protection, but as a CIA station chief, I work with the Secret Service, and I know the basics. And these people didn't even approach just fulfilling the minimum requirements, which really makes you think that this is just incompetent. The incompetence that represents the Biden administration in general, and also DEI hiring, is just this. I hope is a wake up call to the American people on how deep the rot is within our government institutions.
Yeah, this does appear to be systemic. And I think you're absolutely right, Scott, that this isn't just about replacing the head of the Secret Service. This is about looking at who actually was accountable for this specific instance agency-wide. And as one member of Congress really put it very well, that when you have accountability that is spread through so many different layers, then you have a lot of plausible deniability by a lot of different people, and you never really ultimately can pinpoint who was responsible for what. And it seems like there's a lot of passing the buck that is going on. But we do have a new acting director of the Secret Service, Ronald Rowe. What do you know about him, and is he any better actually than Kimberly Cheadle, or does it really even matter who is at the top?
Right. I think that I just read a statement he just put out, and he's a 25-year veteran of the Secret Service. And I think that what he officially put out, he's going to be going to the site in Pennsylvania today, I think. But what he's saying all the right things. Okay, so that's good. At least he's not openly contemptuous like the previous loathsome head of the Secret Service. She was contemptuous of of questions from the people's Congress. But this guy's making all the right noises. But and so that's good. But he does seem perhaps, we'll have to say, a little bit reluctant. When asked about when he was going to start firing people, he was like yesterday. He was like, "Oh well, I've got to check into things. I don't want to just start firing people. We have to have an investigation." Okay, but the real proof of the pudding will be, let's say, a month from now. Has he removed? After a month, he should have enough facts. He should have gathered enough facts. He should be able to make intelligent decisions about people being removed. If he hasn't removed him in a month, then he is another swamp creature who is avoiding accountability.
Yeah, so well said. Thanks so much for your insights, as always, Scott Uhlinger. Really appreciate it. And that's all the time that we have this morning. So much news to cover. It's only an hour, and we could spend so much more time. But we'll be back tomorrow morning here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. In the meantime, you can always reach me and my team, Jenna@AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.